You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Friday, August 20th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and smash the button so you get this bad boy once it goes live. Speaking of bad boys, if you haven't retweeted at ChickenXDinner yet, the tweet with the four hoodies, I'm going to give two of those away. Go retweet it. Once we get the 5,500 followers, I'm going to give two of those suckers away for free. They are so soft. I can't stop wearing the one around the house, and it's 90 degrees in Boston. I still wear that thing most nights, and the reviews on that hoodie, so good. It looks so good. Hot with the chicken silhouette there, the black, the red, the blue. Giving them away. Trying to give them away. So go share that. Coming up on the show tonight, Daniel Wallach will join us. He is one of the top, I think actually he's the top, sports betting and gaming law expert. He knows everything about all of these different states. And Dan breaks down the betting lawsuits in Florida, a ballot initiative in California, and the bidding war in New York. Lots of information. And Dan's one of those guys, you just wind him up and he goes. So he gives you in-depth breakdowns in those three big states. That's a trifecta for handle. Florida, New York, California. None of them legal yet. Well, New York has betting, but not mobile betting, and that's really what they want. When those three states get grooving, though, the handle is going to be insane. Still don't have Georgia or Massachusetts or Texas, but there's a lot of moving parts around this country, and Dan Wallach will make everything easy for you to understand. I got an interesting direct message Thursday on social media. Hi, Sam. I'm one of the social media guys at sportsbetting.com, this person writes. We announced a partnership with Maxim to create our new brand, Maxim Bet. We will be switching all of our posts in a few weeks, and we invite you to follow us at Maxim Bet USA for the same great content. Thanks. Handshake emoji. Wait a minute. Is Maxim a sports book now? I used to read Maxim when, like, Alicia Cuthbert was on the cover. What? Now we're taking bets? Fanatics. We talked about this last week. They used to sell you posters and things that you would put up on the wall. Now they're taking your bets. Maxim. Used to be a magazine for men. Now taking your bets. What's next? Amazon bets? I think that's inevitable. Amazon bets. McDonald's bets?
Would you like a parlay with your fries, sir?
What's next? I remember Maxim was a great magazine to read when I was like 14. Now I'm getting direct messages from sportsbetting.com that they are creating and working together with Maxim to make Maxim Bet. Okay. Everybody's taking bets now. Everybody's taking bets. Last night was great. How about that for a transition? I didn't know how to spin out of Maxim taking bets. I absolutely love nights like those on Twitter with our Chicken Dinner following. The boys had the under. The neighborhood had the under. Under 38.5. And I'll tell you what, felt great when the Eagles decided last minute, hey, Jalen Hurts, yeah, he's not feeling too good. He's not going to play. So Joe Flacco is starting for Philly. I'm thinking, well, this is going to be an easy under. 38.5, Patriots, Eagles. I'm feeling good. It's the Joe Flacco show. The guy can't move. He can't run. He can barely throw anymore. Naturally, with Flacco, there's bedlam in the first few minutes. Did you see the play, by the way? First and 10, ball at the Philly 41, 13 minutes and 41 seconds to go. We are just underway in the first quarter. The center snaps the fucking ball 15 yards over Flacco's head. I'm like, oh no. Fall on it. You're waiting for him to just pounce and just fall on it. He picks it up, and then he tries to avert the pressure and I think throw the ball, but then he gets creamed and fumbles it. Of course, New England falls on it inside the 10, first and goal, and a touchdown plays later. So 2 minutes in and change. Touchdown. 7-0 Patriots. And you get the messages on Twitter. Not a good start. I thank you for confirming what we all know. I was not expecting Joe Flacco to start, number one, nor did I expect him to have the ball whipped over his head and then him pick it up and fumble it 10 yards backwards. You can't plan for that. My buddy George, who I work with at Nesson, I don't know about the under, Sam. Thanks, George. So we got 38.5. People already hating. It's 7-0. At the half, 19-0 New England. 32 New England after three. And this was the play, really. Third and goal from the 6 with about 9 minutes to go. Brian Hoyer's in there, and he's trying to carve up another touchdown. He fired incomplete, and Belichick said, nah, I'll just kick the field goal. Thank God. 35-0. We got 38.5. It stays under somehow. Patriots were driving again, and then I think one of their receivers fumbled the ball to the Eagles, and then it was punt, and that's it. And big thanks to kicker Quinn Nordine, who went to Michigan. He missed 2 field goals last night and an extra point. Every butt takes a little bit of luck, but I think sometimes things are a wash. Okay, if he makes 2 field goals, fine. But usually the quarterback is not going to get sacked and fumble inside the 10 in the first minute of the game. So I don't want to hear, oh, you were on the wrong side. Like, it doesn't matter. I don't care. If I would have told you that the Eagles would not have Jalen Hurts for the whole game and the Eagles wouldn't score, how much money would you have bet on the under? Be honest. We take it. We move on. 3-0 in the preseason now. And we got the Vikings on Saturday, -2.5. The bartender is foaming at the mouth. I don't know if you saw this. I put on Twitter last night, at Chicken X Dinner. Bartender is getting the itch, and he's ready to scratch. And when that guy barks, you pay full attention. Every time I get that ping on the phone or the vibration, and I look down and see bartender, I stop everything I'm doing. Quote, 3 weekends until week 1. And he put 11 exclamation points after week 1. 3 weekends until week 1. Let's get that money, followed by 4 of the emojis with the money tongue sticking out. Holy fuck, is this guy ready to lose? Let me remind you, if you don't know who the bartender is and you're new to this show, the bartender is a guy who is very, very bad at gambling. And he only bets the NFL for the most part. He'll pop his head out of the whack-a-mole machine for the NBA sometimes, college basketball sometimes. It's rare. He's NFL, and he'll play every week of the NFL. Last season, our guy picked 34 games against the spread, mostly spreads, a couple totals here and there. He actually had a Monday night pick where he parlayed the favorite in the over, now that I think about it. I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, but I do have the results in front of me. 11-23 in the NFL. That is 32.3%. That's bad. Sample size, I know, it's small. But this is the guy who finds himself on the 2.5-point favorite that wins by 2. He's the guy that takes the 14-point dog that loses by 30. He takes 6.5, loses by 7. That's the way the bartender rolls. He's always on the wrong side. He's the squarest of the squares. And guys like that, sometimes, they're worth fading. So I was very excited to get that text on August 19th from the bartender with 11 exclamation points that the NFL week 1 is almost here. I promise you, he's not the only excited one. There is a
group of people that are pumped for 2021 with the bartender when it comes to the NFL. I can't wait. And to see that social media post explode, it makes me happy. My favorite response is, does he know that everybody faces picks? He kind of has an idea. Kind of. He also still has a flip phone. New Jersey is now the third highest grossing sports betting market in the world by total handle. Think about that. This is a tweet from Ryan Butler from the Action Network. New Jersey trails only Germany and the United Kingdom in total highest grossing market. Let me remind you that Germany has 83 million people. The United Kingdom has 67 million people. New Jersey has 8.8 million people. That's staggering. How many people are getting down in New Jersey? And I wonder what the handles look like. Let's fast forward a bit when New York has online figured out. There will be a dip in the New Jersey total handle. I still think they're a top three state in the next 5 years. I would think, because it's an established market. But you're going to lose a lot of that handle to New York, because people in New York have to cross the border to bet on their phone. They get in the car, they drive across the border, bam, make a bet. Get on the train, go to New Jersey, get off, bam, make a bet. So I don't think it's going to continue to incrementally grow. I mean, it'll be a big-time player going forward. But once New York has online betting, you have to understand there's going to be a dip in New Jersey. They've benefited from New York not being able to figure out mobile. And New Jersey is only behind Germany and the United Kingdom. How about that? That's insane. Let's stick out east, the American League East. Those damn Yankees, they just won't go away. Rays are still heavy favorites to win the division, but the Red Sox free fall is real. Boston, last 20 games, 6-14. And three of those wins came against the Orioles. Meanwhile, the Yankees, last 21 games, 17-4. Seven straight wins since they got walked off by Tim Anderson. New York also 10-1 with Anthony Rizzo in the lineup. Ooh. Thought he would have been good in Boston. That would have been a move he could have made. I know he's not the only reason, but man, who do you want up in September? Anthony Rizzo or Bobby Dalbec? Whose glove do you want on the diamond in the 8th, 9th inning? Anthony Rizzo's or Franchy Cordero's? I mean, it's no coincidence that Rizzo is going to help swing this division. I still don't think the Yankees win it. I think it's Tampa's, and the numbers do say that. Tampa has a 5-game lead on New York, 6.5-game lead on the Red Sox. And here are the odds. Consensus numbers, I'll give you the odds boom consensus. Rays minus 220, Yankees 4-1, Red Sox 850. Obviously, if you shop around, you can find better numbers. On the Yankees, I see, let's see, well, that's the highest number, actually. So those are the highest numbers on all these teams, or the best prices, for that matter. So the best price for the better on the Rays right now is minus 220 at DraftKings. The highest number on the Yankees is 4-1 at Unibet, Foxbet, SugarHouse. And for the Red Sox, DraftKings plus 850. So those are the best prices for the consumer. Foxbet, Red Sox, 6-1. FanDuel, 650. Like, where are you going to go? You got to go to the best price. But I feel like with that Red Sox number, they are just trying to get you to bet it now. Hey, we can make it higher. Why give them 6? We'll give them 8. I mean, Baseball Reference says the Red Sox have a 53% chance to make the playoffs. So, look, the Red Sox played amazing baseball through the All-Star break and even into the later part of July. And this slide has just fully regressed them. It's an interesting conversation in town. You know, some people, sports talk radio, just killing the Red Sox. Let's also remember, though, this win total before the season was 79.5. So the numbers guys in Vegas said that they were about a 500 team. They are going to exceed those expectations. And a lot of people in town are upset that Chaim Bloom didn't make a bunch of trades. I think you have to take this season and you have to weigh it in a weird way. Because in a town like Boston, Chicago, New York, they're used to winning. People don't want to hear about, well, the future. Could the Red Sox have made some trades to benefit their ball club? Could they have traded for Anthony Rizzo? Could they have traded for a starting pitcher? Yeah. That's not how Chaim Bloom operates, though. He builds. He makes the minor leagues a great place to grow and develop talent that eventually will come up. But the organization didn't want to sacrifice the future for the present. That's what they're going to do. It's not making everybody happy. Look, we got Red Sox over 79.5. Feel really good about it. I also talked about Red Sox plus 450 in late May to win the East. Don't feel good about that. Look up. Market's 650, 7, 8 to 1. But that's where we're at in the American League East. The Rays, probably going to win it. Some books, minus 300 or higher. I wouldn't be betting New York or Boston. They're enticing you with those numbers. And I'm not laying minus 220 on the Rays. Yankees 2 weeks ago, were, you could have found a 850, 9-1. Do you like the Yankees at 3-1? Not really. They're still five games back. And there's not much time left. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But I don't think any of these teams are bettable at this point in time. That's my takeaway. Wanted to talk about another strikeout prop. We discussed Dylan Cease a couple weeks ago, who has been on a tear. My buddy Maiden Focus is a tremendous handicapper, and if you don't follow him, you really should. His handle is at Maiden Focus, M-A-I-D-E-N Focus. Does a lot of ponies and a lot of baseball. Really good. He's been all over strikeout props this year. And this morning he told me, hey, Sam, FanDuel's got a bad number on Sam Henkes. I think that's how we say it. Henkes or Henkes? I'm not sure. Either way, he's a lefty for the Indians. Maiden Focus says, under 4.5 Ks, minus 140 at FanDuel. DraftKings, under 3.5, minus 190. Oh, wait a minute. I repeat, under 4.5, minus 140. Under 3.5, minus 190. Think about it. If you haven't been following this guy closely, he doesn't go long into games. And he's not a strikeout pitcher by any means. He might go 2 innings today. Last 5 starts for Sam Henkes. Henkes, whatever. August 14th at Detroit. He goes 2 innings, 3 strikeouts. August 9th against Cincinnati. 2 innings, 1 strikeout. July 7th at Tampa. 4 1/3, 3 Ks. July 2nd against Houston. 2 2/3, 3 Ks. June 27th at Minnesota. 3 1/3, 1 K. This guy doesn't go long, and he doesn't really strike anybody out. The Angels strike out more than a lot of teams do, but the proof is in the pudding here that Cleveland is using this guy for a couple innings, maybe 3, and then they go to the bullpen. This is what we used to call in high school Johnny Holstaff Day. Who's going today? Everybody. I don't think you're going to see Sam Henkes go out there and throw 7 innings. So if you still have under 4.5, minus 140 or so, that is a great bet compared to other places that have 3.5 with heavy juice in the under. Where are you going to go? Always be shopping. Last thing, are you wagering on the Little League World Series or are you not? How sick are you? We used to do this all the time back in the day. I don't bet on the Little League World Series anymore. I hate to admit that. Ben from Groveland tweeted yesterday, wait, my local bets me bet on the Little League? Exclamation point, question mark. Any cappers on here? I was dying laughing at this guy. I don't think he's going to bet a lot of money on it, but I know he likes to get down. It reminds me of a personal moment back in 2015 when Jackie Robinson West from Chicago, the South Side, they made a run this year. And they actually won the United States Championship, which was later vacated because they had kids from all over the place on the squad. some of their best players were from Oak Forest. One was from Oak Park. They were lying about where their aunts and uncles lived. And, like, the roster, it was a super team, essentially. We didn't know that at the time, though. And I remember I had, I think I had the under, I don't even remember what the total was, but it was under in a Jackie Robinson West game, whoever they played in the Little League World Series, whichever team they played, I don't remember. But I remember really having to take a step back in my personal life when there was a bases clearing double in the first inning. JRW was in the field, a couple walks, I think a base hit, maybe two outs, and I got the under. So you don't need runs. I failed to realize at the time these kids are 11 and 12 years old. So there's a fly ball deep center. Center fielder misjudged the ball. You know, first step is always back if you're an outfielder. If you know what you're doing, first step is always back. Well, this thing was one of those seeing eye line drives, and the kid came in and then went, uh-oh. And as he's turning his shoulders and sprinting back to the wall, the ball flies over his head. Three runs score. I went ballistic. I'm like, what are you doing? And people that I'm watching the game with are like, they're just kids. Like, oh, yeah, my bad. Little do they know, I got a couple hundred on this Little League under, and there should be no runs, and now there's three. And I think they eventually, the game went way over the total, but you set the tone in that first inning. Yeah, that was probably my last Little League World Series bet. But I remember just being irate that this 11-year-old from Roseland didn't make the proper angle on a line drive. And it's like, wow. I really should re-examine my priorities here. Maybe no more Little League baseball bets. I'm going to draw a line in the sand. No more Little League going forward.
Joining us on Chicken Dinner, he is all over the beat for sports betting and gaming law. He's an attorney, the founder of Wallach Legal, also works for The Athletic, and is the co-host of the Con Detrimental podcast. Daniel Wallach on Twitter, at Wallach Legal. What time is it in Russia right now, Dan?
Oh, in Siberia, where I'm actually here voluntarily, it's 12:30. So I'm 11 hours ahead of you. But looking at the bright side of things, I'm 11 hours ahead of the East Coast for purposes of breaking early morning stories. So I get the jump on the front end of the news cycle, and then I'm sleeping during the afternoon when most of this stuff happens anyway. So there's some good and there's some bad. But yeah, this is the first, probably your first guest live or somewhat live from Siberia.
First and maybe the last.
Yeah, good luck trying to find another gaming law expert from Russia who's well-versed in the United States gaming and sports law landscape. We're a dying breed. There's only one of us left in Russia.
I've been following your feed, and those of you listening now that are trying to get the skinny on what's going on around the country in terms of sports betting expansion, you have to follow Dan at Wallach Legal, W-A-L-L-A-C-H Legal. Every time I look at your feed, there's something different in Florida. I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not. What's the latest out of the state of Florida? Because we know that is one of the largest states in this country, and the handle there would be insane. We still got some moves to make in Florida, but what's the latest and what have you made of the progress down there?
Okay, well, I mean, this all dates back to, you know, late May when the state of Florida and the Seminole Tribe entered into a compact, which is a federal law vehicle that governs gambling on Indian lands. And it only really permits gambling actually on Indian lands. And they tried to shoehorn in online sports betting and all this other stuff that takes place outside the reservation within a compact, which is limited really to the reservation. So naturally, there were going to be legal challenges. And I think I wrote in early May that lawsuits will be coming. And here we stand 3 months later. The Department of the Interior has approved the compact through inaction. And one suit was filed in Tallahassee in early July, which was a federal law case to challenge the online sports betting component of the compact. The same parties amended that lawsuit yesterday. I don't know when your audience is going to be listening to this podcast, but that lawsuit was amended this week, and the same group of paramutual operators, which are Magic City Casino and Bonita Springs Poker Room, they filed a second lawsuit in the District of Columbia Federal Court, essentially seeking kind of the similar relief where they're challenging the approval of the compact. But instead of the challenge in Florida, the legal challenge is a direct constitutional attack on the validity of the compact under the United States Constitution. In Florida, in that case, the parimutuel plaintiffs have argued that granting the tribes a statewide monopoly to the exclusion of all other stakeholders violates the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. So that's a lawsuit that challenges federal constitutionality. The D.C. lawsuit, by contrast, hones in on the Department of the Interior's approval of the compact, and the relief that the plaintiffs seek in Washington, D.C. is to set aside or invalidate the compact under the Administrative Procedure Act, which is a federal statute. And the argument in the D.C. lawsuit is that the off-reservation gambling, which is statewide mobile sports betting, as well as sports betting that originates outside of tribal land at parimutuel venues, that those components of the new gaming compact violate the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act because they involve gambling that takes place outside of Indian lands, when the statute requires that the gaming has to take place within tribal lands. So they're very similar types of, they're similar lawsuits factually, but they seek different kinds of relief. You know, one is an administrative challenge to the agency's approval, and the other is a straight head-on attack on the constitutionality of the statute. So these plaintiffs are basically trying to take two bites at the apple, and they'll be happy if either lawsuit succeeds. All they need to do is win one of them, but the filing of these lawsuits in and of themselves do not do anything to block the rollout of online sports betting in Florida, which is slated to begin on October 15th. So the lawsuits are stage one or step one. The next shoe that's going to drop either this week or next week are that the plaintiffs will have to file a motion for a temporary restraining order and or motion for a preliminary injunction, which is basically an emergency request at the outset of the case to keep the status quo intact and prevent the rollout of online sports betting and maybe even brick and mortar sports betting until the case concludes. And I would expect that kind of a motion to be, you know, filed imminently, and it stands a very good chance of succeeding.
I'm no longer amazed, Dan, when I see these handle numbers across the country. They're just staggering, the amount of money that Americans are legally wagering on sports. When you think about the big picture, we still don't have some of the heaviest hitters. We just talked about Florida, New York, California, Massachusetts, Georgia. A lot of these big pieces of this American puzzle are not a part of the pie yet. And you broke this last week with California, how they filed paperwork with the Attorney General proposing that initiative for November 2022 that would allow tribes, racetracks, card rooms, and also the teams themselves to offer in-person and online. I was surprised by that. And I think, you know, some people in this space were surprised as well, because many people were thinking California might never figure this out. What was the turning point out west?
Well, I wouldn't call it a turning point. Anyone can file a proposal to amend the Constitution. Any citizen has the right to file a proposed ballot initiative. It's just paperwork. But the reality is, in order to successfully pass a ballot initiative and change the California Constitution, it's a very arduous and expensive process that, in this instance, given how divisive sports betting is in California with the tribes, the card rooms, and everybody, you know, fighting for a piece of the pie, this is going to be a campaign that's going to cost in excess of $250 million just in TV, radio, and newspaper advertising. So no one's going to go to the trouble of filing a proposed ballot initiative unless they have the financial wherewithal to see this through until the end of the line. So I wouldn't call the filing of that ballot initiative a major, game-changing development. What it really represents is a recognition that the time is soon drawing near to file these kinds of ballot initiatives in order to make the statewide ballot in November 2022. Now, the tribes already have a proposed constitutional amendment that's going to be on the statewide ballot, but their measure only allows in-person betting at tribal casinos and certain thoroughbred horse racetracks. California being as populous as it is, we're talking a 40 million person population, the largest in the country by far. It's so geographically expansive that to sort of have in-person only sports betting is anachronistic, and it's also a missed opportunity. And the tribal initiative also leaves out the card rooms, and it goes a step further and gives the tribes the ability to bring lawsuits against the card rooms for violating, California gaming laws. So, of course, the card rooms may very well be behind this rival initiative to, you know, level the playing field and maybe, you know, muddy up the waters a little bit by having a competing initiative, which one, grants them the same right as the tribes, two, brings mobile or online sports betting throughout the state to four different classes of stakeholders. And three, a hidden detail in the new ballot initiative is that it grants the card rooms the ability to operate, you know, blackjack and certain other house banked card games, and would enshrine into the Constitution of California the permission to operate these like player dealer games, which are so controversial in Florida. So this is really a rival initiative. And the crazy part about this is when you think about how New York is going to roll out sports betting, we don't know how many operators will be selected. It could be as few as four operators, two platform providers. If this rival California initiative is passed by the voters, think of how many card rooms, tribal casinos, horse race tracks, and professional sports teams are. I've added up all the different stakeholders in each of these groups. You're looking at in excess of 150, you know, license holders. We're talking about 150 brick and mortar venues and 150 skins. Mm.
It was like a consortium with all the casino companies, the teams, you know, the Yankees, the Sabres, Yes Network. They all sort of got together and said, no, we're going to make this happen. I think New York has had enough of the people from New York, Dan, getting on the train, going to New Jersey, hopping off the train, placing a mobile bet, and then going back to New York. I've been told that the numbers are impossible to calculate how much money New York loses to people that bet in other states on the phone.
Well, I mean, the reason it took so long and the reason California, Texas, and Georgia are still waiting to legalize sports betting is that each of those states has a state constitutional provision, which either actually or is perceived to tie the hands of the state legislature. So in those states, for several years running, at least in New York, the argument was, well, you can't bring mobile sports betting to the people of New York without amending the state constitution. I don't believe that that's true. And Governor Cuomo was the only person who consistently maintained that position. And since he's the one who has to sign into law any legislative enactment of sports betting, his word carried a lot of weight. So that's why it's taken so long in New York and in California, Texas, Florida, and Georgia. There are constitutional dimensions in play which kind of delay the rollout of sports betting. But New York is going to be a really strange animal because the reality is the numbers that are going to be generated for the state are going to be far in excess of what Nevada and New Jersey generate in terms of state tax collections. You know, the largest handle last year in 2020 was generated by the state of New Jersey, $6 billion in turnover, sports betting, wagering transactions. Of those $6 billion, the state's tax collection from operator revenue only amounted to, what was the number? $50 million. That's a sizable number, right? But under Governor Cuomo's proposal, where every operator who wants to bid for online sports betting has to put their best foot forward. You're not going to end up with a 14% online tax rate in New Jersey. You're going to see, this is the ultimate truth serum. Operators are going to pony up the most that they think they can afford to part with in order to get the opportunity. And it's going to yield a revenue share for the state of 50%, 51%, or maybe even higher. If there's an outlier bid from a company like Bet365 or Fanatics, that will generate in year one in excess of $500 million annually just in state tax collections, meaning 10 times what New Jersey, the most successful sports betting operation in the country, New York State in year one will do 10 times, the 10 times the state tax collection that New Jersey would do and can be, I believe, in within their bid proposal included a price matrix, which assumed that if there were 9 operators, the state's tax revenue or revenue share would be between $800 million and $900 million annually. Think about that. I mean, this is not going to be necessarily the best thing for operators or the best thing for consumers, but certainly for the state tax, for the state treasury. The New York system of competitive bidding for online sports betting is going to be the most lucrative vehicle for any state anywhere in the country. And it very well may be a system that other states may want to emulate. This is Governor Andrew Cuomo's ultimate fuck you to operators and to the sports bettors in New York. This is really good for the state, but it's not necessarily good for the industry or for consumers who may be surprised that they don't get the kind of incentives and promotions that they're used to seeing in other states that have lower tax rates.
I have one final question, and this will force you to put your handicapping hat on. So if you
I'll
have
tell
that,
you who's going to get it. I'll tell you who's going to get it.
You don't even know what I'm asking. I was going to say at the end of 2023, 42.5 states are legal. Over, under.
42. Under.
Under. Easy.
I mean, we're only at 30, and you know the degree of difficulty gets much higher once you get past the initial 30. I mean, Texas is not going to come to legalization until 2023, 2024. California, it's hard to handicap, but certainly the states that have constitutional aspects to it, where you have to have a ballot initiative. I mean, that tacks on an additional year. I think it's going to be slightly under 42, but I think the overarching message here is that we're getting closer and closer. There'll never be all 50 states, but certainly from the decision on May 14th, 2018, which overturned PASPA, to go from one state that had single game sports wagering to now we're at 30, maybe 30 states plus the District of Columbia in slightly more than 3 years. So the rate of progress will just keep, incrementally inching forward. Now, the question I thought you were going to ask me, and I'll answer it as a bonus round question, is who's going to win the bidding in New York? Who will ultimately get to operate online sports betting in New York? Will it be which of the 6 consortiums will get it? My answer and my belief is that 2 consortiums will be selected, not just one. Obviously, you've got to go with DraftKings, FanDuel, BetMGM. Those are the 3 largest online sports betting operators in the country. And FanDuel and DraftKings can tap into their New Jersey customer base, as well as their New York daily fantasy sports user base. So those 2 pools of customers, along with the databases of the New York Yankees, Buffalo Bills, Buffalo Sabres. I mean, you could just shoot that into the moon and really drive revenue in year one right away without having to, get the message out. That's a ready-made statewide, database. They'll get it, but so too will the group fronted by Kambi.
Yep, Caesars, Resorts World, Bet Rivers.
And you know why? You know why they're going to be included? Because they were smart enough. First of all, they bid a percentage point more than DraftKings, FanDuel, Bally's, and BetMGM, 51% to 50%. But what really got my attention was that they were smart enough to include 2 of the 4 state-licensed New York casinos within their bid proposal. Two of the operators or proposed operators are going to be Rivers/Rush Street, which operates a casino in Schenectady, and Resorts, which operates one of the other four casinos. And you have to remember that the right to have sports betting in New York is derivative of a state constitutional provision, which mandates that casino gambling occur at no more than 7 facilities. Sports betting it has been legislatively authorized as a form of casino gambling. And in order to minimize the outrage from the casinos who've been stricken out of this bill, I think it would be helpful, and it would minimize the litigation risk to select the bid that includes at least 2 out of the 4 casinos, because the casinos got the short end of the stick when Governor Cuomo's proposal trumped the one that had long been championed by Senator Joe Addabbo and Assemblyman Gary Pretlow. Under the legislative proposals going back 3 years, the casinos got to control who their online sports betting partners were, and the casinos would naturally get a revenue share from their market access partners. Cuomo's proposal, which was signed into law, eliminates any reliance on previously agreed market access deals and substitutes the state of New York in place of the casino for purposes of having the contractual relationship with the online sports betting company. The casino's only role in this is that they get a $5 million fee for hosting the servers on their casino properties. But in all other respects, the casinos aren't going to make any money. And that's just a complete turnabout from where things stood under the prior legislative plan. So I think it would be in the State Gaming Commission's best interests to try to do something that recognizes and includes casino operators, directly includes casino operators within online sports betting. So my final prediction is that the Gaming Commission will select groups 3 and 5 and scale them up to a revenue share of 51%, because they've got to pay the same revenue share. And it's basically going to be those, 9 operators, which is not so bad.
The information is second to none when we talk to Dan Wallach on Twitter at Wallach Legal. Gaming law, sports betting, and the co-host of the Con Detrimental podcast. Also, you can read Dan's work on The Athletic. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you staying up late, and we thank you for the education, sir.
Sam, it's my pleasure as always. I've been waiting my turn very patiently to get on Chicken Dinner. Is there going to be a gift? Is this like Kiner's Corner, where I'm going to get like a gift certificate for some kind of chicken parm or chicken dinner at Pollo Tropical? Is that part of the gig?
If that's what you want, that's what we'll do.
Okay.
And when you get to Boston, we got to go out for dinner. That's the rule. That's the real rule.
Strega.
Oh, Strega North End. Oh, it's my favorite.
I threw probably the biggest law firm function from. I have my own law firm, and 3 years ago, at a gaming conference, it was ICE North America. It was like 2019. I rented the restaurant Strega, in on Hanover, not the Seaport Strega, but the real
North
Strega.
End.
The North End. I basically had the whole restaurant to myself. I invited like 30 of my favorite friends. I think there were some other diners in the restaurant, but we occupied most of the place. It was one of the greatest dining experiences that I've ever had with a group of people. And I'm still reminded by people who attended that it was like the best, the gaming industry event, function that they ever went to. So I have great memories. And whenever I'm in Boston, every single meal I consume is on the North End. I don't think I've had a non-Italian meal like the last 12 nights I've spent in Boston.
It is a date. I will see you at Strega, buddy.
All right, you're on.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Daniel Wallach, a must follow if you want to keep an eye and an ear on all things going on around this country when it comes to legalized sports betting, at Wallach_legal, WALLACH. Record check, 159, 151, and 5. We're up 1.2 and now 3-0 in the NFL preseason. We got the Vikings Saturday night, -2.5. I don't care. I don't care that it was pick or 1 or 1.5. I got the Vikings by a touchdown or more. Not too worried. Coming up next week on Chicken Dinner, we are headed to Vegas, getting my weekend schedule in order, Ed Sammons, Jeff Sherman, Tony Miller, Dwayne Colucci, Chris Andrews, Jay Cornegay, Alan Berg, Robert Walker, Matt Metcalf. Let's go. Going to sit down with all of those cats in their sports books, and we'll share those interviews over the coming weeks. Excited. There's a lot of good stories there, a lot of information, and a lot of bookmaking 101. Why do these guys move numbers the way they do? Why do they take bets the way they do? Lots to get to with all these guys, and happy to share that with you. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next week right here on Chicken Dinner. So it's